Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Real Spoilers, powered by ReviewSTL.com.
Warning, the following film discussion will ruin the ending of any movie you haven't seen. Example, Bruce Willis is dead at the end of The Sixth Sense. See how I ruined it for you? Just like that. Here are a few more.
Silent breed is people!
I am the father.
Get it?
Real Spoilers. You've been warned.
Broadcasting from the lush but not lavish studios located in the basement of the O'Keefe Institute for Advanced Film Snarkitude, this is Real Spoilers, episode 299.
A true milestone.
And we are a wounded beast.
I mean, speak for yourself.
No, well, you're married now, so yeah.
You're wounded.
So there were two. We're like less than Genesis, yeah, when they were three.
There's just two of us
two
here.
Two is less than three.
Yeah, and there's... It's just you and me.
Well, no, we have a guest.
Oh.
But there's just two regulars.
Oh, okay.
If you want to call us regulars.
Hello.
So introduce yourself, sir.
Hi, my name's Devin King, and I am an animator from St. Louis. Graduated from Lindenwood with a degree in journalism. I actually used to work for the newspaper there. Got invited to work with Allied, which is the people that do the screenings that I met you guys at.
Yeah.
And during my career there, I liked writing about movies and about video games, and then I eventually got into actually taking an extra year with college to actually practice that, and here am I now doing freelance. So,
and hopefully you'll be working, maybe creating the next Pixar film. And we'll say we knew him,
and then he will block us on Twitter
because he doesn't have Facebook.
Yeah, I was going
to
say,
no, that's right.
He's the one that
doesn't have Facebook because of his mother.
Yeah, yeah.
I forgot about that.
Tom always remembers a good ribbing.
Yes, I'm ribbed for your pleasure. So
should we introduce ourselves?
Oh yeah, well, let's introduce ourselves. I'm all thrown off now.
This is Kevin,
and this is Tom.
that's really weird.
It's really. Abbreviated.
Yeah.
So I am going out of town again.
Wow.
I'm gallivanting around. Well, you did 2 weeks. I did 2 weeks, just not consecutive.
Oh, okay.
So that's the difference.
Feels your frequency is throwing me off. It's just like, this guy's always out of town. I go out of town once in a year, and you go out of town 2 weeks in a row.
I know. So by the time you hear this, I will be in Mexico, or if you prefer, Mexico.
Oh.
I don't know if you know that's how they say it.
And what is that in English?
Mexico.
I'm not familiar with that.
Well,
term.
I'm a big fan of cultural appropriation.
Okay.
So, you know, so I'm going to say it that way too.
Okay.
So I look fancy. Like when people go to Taco Bell, you know, I'm like, I would like a burrito.
I'm like, no. I was just going to say, you look like you should be saying Mexico. That
sure.
really fits your look.
I am the quintessential ugly American. So Crystal and I are going to Mexico. So we're recording this a little early, and the other guys, it didn't fit their schedules. We just weren't important enough. So.
And we should also mention that, I mean, that's fine, whatever, about your thing. But Devin, back to you. So you've been an early adopter of this podcast. So, we've met you at the screenings, and you obviously live in the same area we do. But you started listening at what episode?
Episode 2, World War Z.
Wow.
Oh,
episode 2. Yeah. That's crazy.
So he just skipped Man of Steel altogether. He knew.
I don't blame him.
Yeah, episode 2, World War Z.
Wow. Did you go out and buy a Pepsi immediately after because you were so parched? And
I remember that. And one of the first I also remember is when you had your one news episode where you did talked about Ben Affleck being Batman for an hour.
Yeah, that's why we stopped doing that like for a while, because when we first started, we were just like, well, should we just do movies, what should we do, and so maybe we'll talk about news stories. But then it became like, by the time we got it edited and up, it was like they weren't news anymore. Yeah. It was, you know, and so it was just like, this is silly.
That's tough. Yeah, so, when you're not on like a live radio show to talk about news,
right?
It's like, well.
And so that's when I guess we kind of slowly over time evolved into the box office report eating up half the episode.
Yeah,
and then
yeah.
It was like, we should just chop this in two.
Yeah.
So, well, you also talk about news while you're talking about other stuff too, all the time.
It tends to come up within that, but it feels more organic. Like, we're not positioning it as news. Is like, here's a news story.
Yeah. But the other notable thing about that is that he completely bypassed our first episode, Man of Steel, and he's just like, yeah, I'm going to skip that one, but World War Z.
The legendary Man of Steel episode. Yeah. Have you ever gone back and listened?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Okay. Yeah. Like the first week after.
Curiosity. Like, yeah. When there were three episodes.
Yeah. Yeah. He's like, I listened to episode two and it was so good, I binged the whole thing.
Now, when someone now goes back and listens through them all.
Oh, yeah.
It's impressive. But Devin,
that's a feat.
We're not going to really praise you for that.
Yeah. So. Like, that's. He's like, wow, thanks.
I have a silver star.
Yeah, exactly. It's maybe bronze. Yeah. So
just some shameless plugs. Don't forget, we're available on iTunes. You can go there, rate, review, subscribe. We're not gonna do the show shares because we're actually recording this one before the last episode went up, so you haven't shared anything. Not because you're lazy, but because we've robbed you of the opportunity. So if you don't hear your name, don't take it personally. It's because you haven't done it yet.
You know, maybe you could just read all the membership of the League of Show Sharers.
Yeah, I'll read all 400 people that will join the group or whatever it's up to. Probably like 60.
Probably 70.
Yeah, but whatever. But no, I won't do that.
Okay.
But they actually have to share the show week to week. That's the rule. So, if you would like to join the League of Show Sharers, you can do that. You can do it on Facebook.com/RealSpoilers or type in League of Show Sharers into Facebook and it'll pull it up. They're connected.
Oh, that's nice.
We connected them. Remember, nice. You can go to the Facebook page and connect to the group. Because there's groups and there's pages, but if we were in Germany, you would make my bunk.
That's right.
Yeah.
Now, Devin, I don't think you've joined the League of Show Shares. Is there any particular reason?
I don't mean to, like, I don't know how I'm going to say this, though, but when I first had Facebook, I was 14, 10 years ago.
Lots of bad haircuts on there.
Oh, yeah. So it's like, I want to get back on there connecting, you know, just for job opportunities and easy stuff like that, but going back
and
on.
Friendship.
Yeah. Logging in, seeing all like the photos that make my back cringe, you know.
One day you will look back on them fondly. You will.
Maybe.
Like, I know for real. Like, I know that, like, when I was like 25 and I would see pictures when I was like, ugh. And now when I see them, I'm like, okay, that's kind of funny. Like, it's just, it's so long ago that you focus on other things like, oh, I used to be thin. Oh, I used to have hair. Like, you're like, okay, maybe that was a really unfortunate usage of my hair, but I had it.
Or like when you're going through a divorce and it sucks at the time.
Well, it's great for just to find all the crazy stuff they're doing on Facebook and then give it to your attorney. I mean, what? Who would do that?
It's like a diary, but just there.
Yeah. Yeah. No, post more pictures of you drinking straight from the bottle. I love it. Love it. And honestly, that was the least of our concerns, right? Oh. But anyway, enough of that.
Yes.
The movie of the week is Dunkirk, and I guess we should start talking about it. Joe isn't here to synopsisize, so I don't even know how to synopsize this movie.
We should maybe go through a breakdown of how they tell this story, if you want to call that.
Boringly?
Yeah. So there's not
just real quick. Did you like it? It's okay if you did. I'm not trying to. I'm just curious where you stand on it overall.
I mean, it honestly gives us more to make fun of you for. So
it's really weird because I love history. I'm not a big Nolan fan though.
Right.
And when I first saw Interstellar, I hated it, but it grew on me. This movie, it feels like B-roll for a BBC documentary to
me. Yeah.
And I love documentaries, and I love the story of Dunkirk. It's a really cool story.
He should tell it sometime.
Yeah, no kidding. This movie literally, I mean, it tells you nothing of the history of why it was happening and the importance of the story.
Right. Mm-hmm. And right now, this movie is sitting at like 98% of Rotten Tomatoes.
One review is bad.
And yeah. I'm just like, what movie did you guys watch? It's like, this is a classic, The Emperor Has No Clothes.
Yeah, mm-hmm. I mean...
Because... I was so bored. When I went there, I was like, I didn't feel like going to see a movie. And I was like, oh, cool. It's only 107 minutes. And then 107 minutes later, I was like, how has it been 4 hours? Yeah. Like,
time just works differently there.
I'm like, oh, no, it's really been 107 minutes.
Yeah, it's unfortunate because, I mean, this is technically. Now, I mean, when I think of filmmaking, I think of storytelling. That's mm-hmm. that is. And you tell a story. There's many different ways to. And it's through visuals, through audio. So I think filmmaking is comprised of so many different parts, but the big picture is you have to nail all those little things. And so technically, from a camera work perspective,
sure.
from an audio and sound mixing mm-hmm. perspective, this movie is stunning in those categories. But it's, in storytelling...
It's just not interesting.
It's not.
I will say, it is visually... Okay, there are shots that are gorgeous. There is really clever CGI. You don't notice it, but there is a lot of CGI in there. There's a lot of practical effects. It's really beautiful. But I don't know if you guys thought this, though, but... The saturation is like turned up to 11, and I felt like it was almost like an Instagram filter over the movie at some point.
To make it look really World War II-y.
Well, there's some shots of the water looks like laundry detergent.
I was wondering like the water.
Well, the ocean does have that.
It was so foamy, but it almost looked like. Like insulation or something. You
it
know
was
what I mean?
Very foamy.
And I was, and I, cause I, it took me out of the film because I was honestly wondering, like,
how is that happening?
Was something happening to the water? Is this what happened when, like, oil and blood mixed in the water? Like, I honestly don't know. Like, I was trying to figure out, like, why does the water look so, even when chunks of the foam would break off, like, as they ran through it, it broke off differently.
And you go on vacation every week, so you would know what an ocean
looks
like.
But I just got back from Colorado.
That's
so,
true. So it's not always to the
right,
beach.
It's not top of mind.
Yeah, I thought that, I guess that's what just seafoam is. I don't know, though. But
I've never
seen... I'm glad I wasn't the only one that was thinking that was weird.
There's some weird stuff for sure. But I mean, as far as like the camera work goes and getting these angles and being in planes and boats and the war scenes, like... The first thing I thought of...
I've never been bored so beautifully.
Right, exactly. Yeah. And I thought...
Well, Thin Red Line.
Oh, yeah, that's right. You're not a fan. I was... Because that's kind of what you're thinking of, but at least that had a story to it. Like it
did it?
But more of a story than this.
I guess.
Like, so what I thought of was if we had Nolan's technical brilliance here with camera work, and I mean, not that he's a cinematographer, but, you know, he's directing the action and telling him what to do, and yeah, obviously he's a pretty brilliant filmmaker overall, and if we had these scenes in a really good, riveting story... Mm-hmm. I think that this would have been amazing.
Yeah.
And yet it looked like just a bunch of war clips strung together without a story. Although, I mean, of course there's a story. I mean, you can tell stories in different ways. But when I say a story, I mean what you're used to.
Right.
Dialogue, characters that you're getting attached to.
Well, the story's being told non-chronologically, right? Like there's three main stories. So there's the kid. I gotta call him the kid because if he had a name, nobody talks in the goddamn movie. So there's no.
Well, the story's the mole,
right?
Is number one,
yeah.
Which isn't the kid. It's
right.
That wall.
It's that wall is a mole. It's called a mole,
right? So you've got the mole. You have the boat, which was what is it? Ocean boat. What was the second one even called?
I can't recall it.
I don't remember.
It's like
I think I might have nodded off by
So the second store basically. Okay, so you've got a whole bunch.
Do
of
they ever give you a third title card?
Yeah.
I don't remember.
They do
it.
Say all three.
And I thought they did themselves a disservice with that because I don't think it made it clear that it was trying to delineate different storylines. I thought it was chapters.
I did too.
And
when
so,
the first one went up, mm-hmm. I'm like, oh, this is chapter
like,
one.
Honestly, until you started saying this, I thought they just forgot to keep giving us chapters.
Because
I was like, why did we not get another chapter after like the first 10 minutes?
But same. Tom, it was so brilliant and artsy.
Yeah.
I mean, that's the problem. But okay, so let's break it up into these stories, which you have to really think about what they're trying to do here. It was not clear, nor was the story or what was going on or the significance. Nothing was made clear by this. To enjoy this, I feel like you really have to know the history. And that's why one reason I think it's not successful, because you can't just go to this movie and say, oh, I learned something and I enjoyed something.
Yeah.
But the three parts are, one is called The Mole, and that is the beaches of Dunkirk.
Well, and there's a timestamp on it, I get now, that it's saying 1 hour.
Yeah, that's how long it took place.
Right, it takes place like 1 hour after the Battle of France, I guess?
No, I think that's how long it took place in the movie. The period of time the story was told is that time.
Yeah.
So you're still trying to figure it out.
The whole thing's the evacuation.
But so okay.
Right, and
so
the evacuation is like took like what like 9 days,
so
8 days. I think okay, you might be right though.
So that took place in 1 day. So Dunkirk is French. The first story, okay. And you have all the soldiers, British soldiers, French soldiers, the Allied forces, I guess you would call them
Belgium soldiers.
They're all stuck in Dunkirk, mm-hmm. and they're surrounded on all sides by Germany.
Yep.
So it's about this evacuation. So this story takes place over the course of a day. Then we go to England. It's England from France, I guess, and across the channel. So we go over to England, and you have just a sailor, a fisherman, something. He's just
the private boat guy.
It's a civilian. So this story revolves around civilians, and there has been a call because there aren't enough boats that can safely evacuate these soldiers. So they are calling England, Churchill, I guess, if he was prime minister already.
He was. Yep. He had just become prime minister. Okay. Like for like a week or something.
Yeah,
right?
It was very
like
early. Yeah. So he is calling on civilians to help evacuate these soldiers. There are tens of thousands of them stuck there, and
hundreds of thousands.
Yeah, well, of British soldiers. Sorry,
But there were hundreds of thousands of British soldiers. They end up. They and this is another complaint I have about this movie.
Well, I didn't know. I saw the movie and they didn't tell me anything. So.
Right. Well, and I don't think this movie does. I think it does what the British achieved a great disservice, because it does not convey the scale of what they did. They evacuated over an 8 or 9 day period 338,000 people. Mm-hmm. on their busiest day. They evacuated 68,000 people.
That is incredible.
And then when they got done, they evacuating all the British, they turned around and went back for the French.
Yeah.
And so. I mean, it's an amazing, like, once I read the Wikipedia article,
right.
As we all know, the internet's never wrong. And once I read up about it on Wikipedia, I was like, holy crap. Like, there's like those private vessels. They put out a call for private vessels because they didn't have the ships to get the soldiers out of there. So they just put out a call like, if you want a boat, go get somebody, you know.
Yeah.
And they had like, I think it was like 800 private vessels.
I think it totally am not looking
at any. We're spitballing. We're Americans, so be glad we know any of this.
I think it was 200 military ships and then 700 civilians.
Okay, so it was like total 850 or something boats.
And I believe over 200 military ships were destroyed just in trying to go there.
I think it might have been 200 of both. I could, like I said, spitballing.
Yeah.
But hundreds were destroyed in trying to do this, and that's why they needed all the help
they
could get.
But when they finally pan back and show you all the civilian boats coming, it looks like, what, 40?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I get that they all didn't show up at once, you know?
But you never got the magnitude from this film.
Not one time.
It looked like a lot of soldiers, sure. Yeah. There were a lot.
It was a bunch.
Didn't look like hundreds of thousands or even 50,000. It looked like maybe...
Didn't look like the death toll of Gettysburg.
No.
Which is what it was, essentially, you know?
Yeah, and so I really think this movie does a disservice for a couple different reasons, but one is to the viewer who, going in and trying to see a movie and educate... I'm not saying this is the History Channel, but still, you're going in and you think that you're maybe going to...
He's making a super serious historical movie, so I think at that point, it's incumbent upon him to be... accurate
to explain
and
it.
Explain things and then it's like he goes out of his way to not explain things
because it's artsy,
and then he deliberately deliberately tells the story like apparently like when he was reviewing the records, like he would find inconsistencies in people's stories because we're people,
sure,
right? And so people would remember things different way, so there are like deliberately things in the movie that don't match up. So there's a scene where like the pilot guy swooping in, shooting, like saving the day on a boat, and then like from another angle or another version of the story, that guy's about to drown. That's the same guy that's trapped in there. So when you're like, well, are there more than one, like that's why you're confused. And it's like, when you're deliberately trying to tell the same story from different angles and have them be conflicting, like maybe you kind of got to give somebody a heads up that that's what you're doing.
Yeah, I would have liked to have researched this going into it, and I purposefully
shouldn't have to research a movie.
But I purposefully,
I,
I, 100% agree. Yeah. But what I mean is, if I had to see this movie and I knew this is what I was getting into, I would have educated myself rather than just been like, what is happening?
I'll let him tell me the story.
This movie kind of made it look like the British Air Force had like two pilots total.
That's right. That is, when we get to this next story, that's the other thing. So then the next, the third story. So the second one is civilians, and it's one fisherman or boater or civilian with a boat, and his son's friend, and they head off to go evacuate some soldiers. So the third story takes place in the air, and it's two British pilots. One's Tom Hardy, one's other guy.
Yeah.
And then one German pilot, basically.
Mm-hmm.
That's it. Yeah. That's our dogfighting.
And they're telling you, you're hearing over the radio that, or not over the radio, but you're hearing on land from the leaders that, like, they won't send more planes because they're trying to keep them in case they lose here, that so they can protect the island of the United Kingdom.
What
right?
about the Germans? Did they send one plane?
I don't know, but
just
but,
one guy.
Yeah. But my point is that, not knowing anything about Dunkirk, like I thought that's what was going on, that they literally only had two or three planes that they were sending to help these guys, because they were like, we have to steel ourselves for what's going to happen after this.
Yeah.
And so when I read, because like I said, I read up about it today, I think they had, you know, a couple hundred planes fighting and nothing.
It's like, just weird that the story literally, I mean, that the point I was trying to make was, it's Tom Hardy,
right,
other British pilot, German bomber.
Wait, so does Christopher Nolan just hate the lower half of Tom Hardy's face?
Yeah. Like, it is really funny that when he's Bane, he acts with just his eyes. And this movie, literally, once he puts the oxygen mask on, he does not take it off till the last scene of the movie.
Yeah.
But to his credit, Tom Hardy can act really well with his eyes. Yeah. I mean, I thought the same thing when he was Bane. You saw his emotion, and he's a good actor.
If you thought you couldn't understand him as Bane, welcome to Dunkirk.
Try to talk over airplane engines and gunfire.
Did you have trouble understanding people in this movie?
Oh, yeah. I mean, I can understand accents, but the sound mixing and editing is so loud.
Yeah.
And that, you know, everyone's voice is like muffled, and
which is good for war movie sounds being loud, but when it comes to dialogue, this should have been a silent movie, because
it was practically a silent. I mean, there were very long stretches where there was no speech, which I think was a bad choice. I feel like he did that so he could have this one twist that comes up later. It wasn't that good of a twist, and it made the movie incomprehensible.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and it really did. And I just, watching these stories unfold, I was so bored, like you mentioned, Tom. And it the action sequences were filmed so well that, like, the action was really good, but just a bunch of action scenes stitched together, that's not entertaining.
Yeah, that's a Fast and Furious movie.
Yeah.
A lot of these action scenes, they seem like they're like really quick in their time. Like, there's a one scene where a guy's drowning in an airplane I don't know how fast it takes for an airplane to, you know, go under, but I would assume as soon as it hits the ground or the water, goes
it's
down
pretty
quick.
It lasts 10 minutes on the screen.
I would thought like 30 minutes, because he's drowning, and then we cut to like a scene where people are like hanging out in a boat. And then we go back to that, and he's still drowning. And then we go back to that, you know, scene in the boat.
And the airplane scene is 1 hour, so we didn't mention that. The boat is 1 week. So it took 1 week to get the boat from England to Dunkirk.
So the boat is Bare Naked Ladies.
It had been 1 week.
It had been 1 week.
Yeah. So that's the time frame. So you have a day with the evacuation, a week for the boat to get to the evacuation, and 1 hour of this dogfight between one plane, because one of the planes eventually is damaged and has to crash land on the water, and that's the drowning scene that Devin mentioned. So it's, for half the movie, it cuts back to Tom Hardy following this one bomber, like, just... No one's shooting anyone. No one's hitting anyone. And literally, they're just following each other
He's literally watching to see how much... Oh, his gas tank is like... His gauge is broken.
That's the most exciting part of that scene. Yeah.
But the whole time where he's just chasing him, it's just him counting down to see how much gas he has left.
But that's what I mean. Like, the most excitement, it wasn't the guns. It was like, well, let me mark how much gas I have left. It was so interesting. You
know, it also means this is another movie where Tom Hardy spends the entire time operating a vehicle.
Yeah.
Wow.
Oh, this is also the third Christopher Nolan movie where Tom Hardy is in it and he's on an airplane.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Inception starts out, Dark Knight Rises on an airplane.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Oh, yeah. I forgot about that.
Interesting.
Yeah. But yeah, because he brings his cast of characters, because you get Cillian Murphy.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
And Tom Hardy and Michael Caine pops up.
Yep. He does?
Yeah.
Michael Caine's in this?
He was the voice on the radio,
Wait,
right?
Really? I was joking with a friend that, like, because every British actor is, like, in this movie. I was like, I bet Michael Caine's in this.
Was that really?
The guy on the radio talking to the airplane sure sounded like Michael Caine to me. I'll research it.
Yeah, it's Christopher Nolan. So
it makes sense.
It would make sense.
It's plausible. I'll check it out. Yeah. But it sure sounded like him. I thought, I'm like, oh, Michael Caine. Like, I thought he was going to pop up, like, as a character at some point. But
now, so it's interesting, the more I thought about this film and what it was, you know, accomplishing the you know, the sound was really good, it was filmed interestingly, you know, all these technical things, it reminded me a lot of Gravity, which I know that
I thought so too,
which I know that, you know, some people really enjoyed it. I did not because it didn't look amazing, sound familiar. Gravity was a technical marvel. It also looked amazing. It looked like they were in space. You would swear they filmed it in space. Right, it looked great. And it was exciting to watch, like you were on a ride, but then the story I thought was lackluster.
Gravity always felt like more of a video than a movie to me, and I feel like this one is
simulation.
More of a video than a movie.
Right, and so that is, I started thinking, man, I had the same problems with this as Gravity, as it's like, yeah, it looks great, but, you know, save that for like an experimental film school test. Like, you know, if you're just going to do technical tests to see if you can, like, you know, do these experimental things, that's great.
And I still think Gravity was a much more interesting story.
Yes.
I get what you're saying, that it's a pretty simplistic story, but I felt like as an adventure movie, like, how do we get from point A to point B, it engaged me in a way that this movie approximates.
Yeah, and I didn't like Gravity, but did I like it more than this? Yes, I absolutely did. And I really didn't care for it because, you know, it felt like a roller coaster ride, but, you know, I just got back from Disney for 2 weeks. I had plenty of rides. I came to see a big summer movie.
It was his honeymoon. He had plenty of rides.
Yeah, thank you. But you know, this
wasn't
is...
wasn't with me.
Well, yeah.
That wasn't our honeymoon.
No, I meant thank you for thinking that.
Oh,
yeah, I appreciate that. But no, this is Christopher Nolan and a July summer big war film. Like, I'm expecting to see something amazing, and all I saw was, yes, was it intense? Were there times where, like, my heart started beating? Like, yeah, because technically he made a film that made you feel these emotions, and it was exciting at parts, but then by the time it wrapped up, an hour and 47 minutes later or whatever, I seriously thought to myself, is that it? That's what I mean.
He really made a fascinating story completely underwhelming.
Yeah.
And I am still mystified at all the people jizzing all over this movie. I have a feeling we're going to get eaten up for not liking it. Like, you didn't get it. I get it. I got that it was boring.
Do we have a sound effect for the jerking off Christopher Nolan hand gesture? Because
there you go.
Don't tell Dan I use his Moraga.
We'll clean it. We'll sanitize it.
I don't know about you, but I feel at the screening we were at yesterday, there was tons of people there. I didn't see or hear anyone that liked it.
You know,
nobody applauded when it was over. There was like a couple, like, smattering, but, like, it, you know, at the end when they kind of, like, they achieve their goal and they get everybody out of France.
The part where you cheer.
The crowd is cheering. Like, the crowd in the film is cheering.
Where you should be excited.
And you could tell that this is supposed to be the part where the audience erupts, and nobody does.
No one. And I'm telling you,
there was more eruption at the ending of Role Models than there was at the ending of this movie.
Seriously, though, and we'll get there, but by the end of this movie, the way that it ends, where it's like, yay, we've achieved our goal, it was so anticlimactic, and it shouldn't have felt that way, because when I went and researched the story, Devin and I talked about it afterwards. Mm-hmm. I researched it like Tom did, and it was like, wow, this really is amazing, but this film did not tell me that.
No.
And I just feel like this is a good supplement to your college history course on World War II history. So you're reading about it, you know the story, hey, look at these awesome visuals, but as a film, as a storytelling medium, it just doesn't work.
No.
I can't imagine, like, in the future, like, high school kids or, like, kids in college taking a history course. They're like, oh, I got a test on World War II. I got to watch Dunkirk. And, you know, they're like, oh, wait, I didn't learn anything.
Right, exactly. I'll just watch Dunkirk real quick. It's only 2 hours long. I'll just learn. So I mean, the main story, so starting off at number one with the mole, of course, you have all these tens of thousands of soldiers on the beach, but it follows these two characters primarily that do not speak.
Yeah.
I mean, there's like one main character, but is there? I mean, I think the one that we find out the twist or whatever is like the main character.
And I thought the other kid, I considered the other kid the main character.
The blonde one?
The one that found Frenchie.
Oh, okay. Oh,
so we surprised the twist is, so he finds the...
Oh, he finds him. I couldn't tell him apart, honestly.
They looked a lot alike. I thought the
British guy
I'm glad they're white, so we don't get in trouble for saying that. But I thought
I
they
have
looked...
no idea who
they were
either.
Both like, you know, like the white guys with dark hair, and they had kind of the same haircut. But so it opens with, like, this town's getting bombed, and this kid's running, and he's looking for a place to take a dump. And then he finally does take a dump, and they turn it into this movie.
Yeah.
No. So
there's gunfire. It's exciting. And again, this being the beginning, and I didn't know what we were getting into. Like, it was exciting, and it was like,
yeah,
wow.
Like at first,
heart
grabbed
pounding,
me, and I was
like,
oh,
it was, yeah.
So he runs across this kid on the beach burying a body. Mm-hmm. And so while he...
So he's the one that's questionable.
So the kid... The
I
guy,
didn't know which
the
one.
Guy burying the body... Is the
is the twist
is the twist guy?
I
that's how I took it. So correct, but again, I could be mistaken because I might have nodded off.
I really thought the guy bearing was
correct.
The twist.
Yeah.
But I don't
and
know.
So he goes by a sand dune trying to take a dump, which I thought was great because they're dropping these leaflets. The Germans are saying you're surrounded, you should surrender, and he's gonna. You could tell he's using
his toilet.
He's gonna wipe his butt with them.
Yeah,
and when he goes behind the sand, I keep wanting to say sun dune. When he goes behind the sand dune, he sees this guy burying a body, and so he goes and helps. Some finish burying the body, and then they decide they all this is essentially wordless. They decide they need to get off the island,
and this is such a scam because you really mentioned it earlier.
Yeah.
But the whole reason they don't talk is not to be artistic,
right?
It's so they can have a twist reveal at the end,
yeah. Right?
So it's such a cheap trick.
So they're trying to get on,
who wouldn't talk during this? You know
right.
what I mean? Like
totally.
That's
so they're trying to get onto. One of the boats that are evacuating. There's a huge long line, so they get an injured soldier on a stretcher, and the two of them basically are sprinting to get onto the boat. This is a great
intense.
Scene.
I mean,
a great scene.
Again,
they're sprinting to get onto this boat before it leaves with this injured soldier, because they know if they're carrying an injured soldier, they'll get put to
it's
the front line.
It's a medical boat.
Yeah.
Well,
and
but
so,
it's a medical boat. That's the whole
yeah.
point of the boat.
Although even at this point, they're saying, should we let them? Because one of the few lines of dialogue, they're like, every stretcher is seven standing
yeah.
men.
Yeah.
And so they get there in time and they get on the boat, and then they get kicked off the boat for
yeah.
some reason, and it's, and they get kicked off the boat, and like a minute later, the boat sinks. Like,
I think
they gets,
figure out that they're
capsizes.
Not
yeah.
medical soldiers. So
right.
You know, well, what is that called? I don't know why I can't think of that. What's the... Who are... Medics. They're
medics,
not medics.
Yeah.
Right.
And so so later, it turns out that the guy he came across, you discover, is French.
This is the big twist at almost the end of the movie.
Yeah.
So the reason that he's not talking is because he doesn't want to reveal he's French, because this is the British evacuation, and they're
yeah.
only taking their soldiers. They make it very clear. The British guys are like,
they're taking
go get
care
your
of
own.
The British first.
Yeah, they said, go get your own boat to the French guys, you know, or the
right.
Belgians, whoever else asked. They're like, no, go on your own boats. So the whole time they're not talking, but the point is that the British guy would be talking. I get that the French guy wouldn't talk,
mm-hmm.
so that makes sense with the
right.
story. But instead
but
of being
for that, okay, but for the French guy to for the French guy to not talk, the only way that works is for the British guy to also not talk.
Exactly. That's
and
why it's a cheap technique,
it's,
but it would never happen.
Yeah. Or, no, absolutely.
Yeah,
I agree.
Yeah, yeah.
It's just really like I agree. It's cheap.
It is a cheap trick,
especially for a movie that's supposed to be so that wants to be
yes.
so. Artsy
it's
and
below,
smart.
It's below Nolan. I mean,
yeah.
we're talking about this.
It's a parlor trick.
This is The Prestige. This is Inception. But I'm just saying the
yeah.
guy that did those, which
right.
were very smart movies, and to rely on a trick where, I mean, the whole point
like
of
the Sixth
Prestige.
Sense.
Is
the Sixth Sense
yes.
is a great movie.
Yes.
It's, I mean, as much as I rip on M. Night Shyamalan, that is a brilliant
it
movie.
Is.
But at the end of the day, it's a parlor trick,
yeah,
right? The whole thing hinges on we're telling the story in a very weird and sideways manner. And
it's manipulative.
It's manipulative. And that's okay. Film, by its by virtue of definition, is manipulative. And it's okay, especially when it works. I mean, It's a Wonderful Life is manipulative, right?
Right.
But it works. But this, for a movie of that, for the type of movie this is professing to be, for it to hinge a major plot point on what is essentially a parlor trick, I think is beneath
but
the film.
How did you guys feel when the reveal came up? I'm just like, whatever.
I didn't care.
Because you don't care about these characters.
No.
And that
is
the problem.
At this point, I was completely divested of this film.
And this is the problem with this type of storytelling. So sure, there are artistic ways where you could have a silent film and have it work. And you could do it in a really artful way and make it work. And it could be an important piece of cinema and all that. But the way this film did it was not effective. And so when you finally see these reveals, you're like, I just don't care. Because how many different ways can you see planes shoot and drop bombs on people at a beach? We probably got 30 minutes of just that going on with no dialogue.
Yeah.
So if you don't care about the people they're shooting in, and I mean, I'm not saying in real life, I don't care. It's people lost their lives.
We're
get
talking
that.
About a film.
A movie. Yes.
Yeah.
So for this story, if you don't connect me with these characters and all I have to go on is good people are dying, well, that isn't, as a movie, going to grab me. And so you don't connect with them. So you can't feel those emotions that you feel when a character that you've followed for 2 hours dies that you really care about, because you haven't been invested. And so, yeah, when that reveal happens that, yeah, this guy wasn't talking because he's French and he's been trying to get his way into the British ships to survive, you're like, oh, okay. Whatever.
Yeah. I mean, I liked the moment when they thought he was German. You know,
yeah,
and they were, and I was like, oh, I guess we haven't heard him talk, but we haven't heard 80% of the movie, and the
no,
people talk hardly
because
I mean,
thought that it was an artistic choice, not a trick choice,
right? And again, when a movie does something like that, when it's clearly designed to be a super smart and important quote unquote film, and then to rely on something like that,
yeah,
I just really found that distasteful.
Well, yeah, and exactly, because this is a real historical event. This is where hundreds of people, thousands of people lost their lives. And yeah, it's not a trick-type reveal movie. It's not, or it shouldn't be.
And you know, the interesting thing is that the idea of having these separate storylines at different chronologies take being told to us, you know, simultaneously toggling back and forth between three different points of time,
and then
essentially they want them to all kind of merge at some point, but they never really fully merge.
No,
but even that premise, that was the movie Best Defense with Eddie Murphy and Dudley Moore, like that. I mean, and it's Eddie Murphy's first real flop, and I'm just like, what a weird storytelling device to lift from a shitty Eddie Murphy movie.
You mentioned that how none of them like actually like intertwine at all, these three stories. I mean, and yeah, it's because they take place at all different times, and that might work better if they were all told at once, like in like Pulp Fiction, you know?
Oh my gosh. Talk about brilliant.
Right.
Brilliant nonlinear storytelling.
And what's fascinating is
Pulp Memento.
Yeah.
No,
yeah.
I mean, to make it even more
connected.
It's
not like he can't do it. But what's interesting is Pulp Fiction does something very similar from a storytelling device, but you never, like, you figure out pretty quickly what they're doing so you can go along for the ride. And this movie, I felt like, really kind of robs you of that.
It does.
And I don't think there's no good reason why you go from one story that takes place a week after in an airplane, and then you go to something that happened the first day, and they don't, I mean, they all take place during the evacuation of Dunkirk, but other than that.
And they do all tie up together. I mean, they do all touch at one point,
right,
but it's not.
And I get that, you know, there's three pretty different aspects of the Dunkirk invasion, that you have the soldiers trying to get off the beach, you have the boats trying to get to the soldier, and then you have the English in the air, and so I get that you're trying to figure out, and they take place by virtue of definition kind of at radically different times within that week, and so to do it the other way would be very episodic. You'd be like beach and now this and now that, and I get that could feel kind of plotting, so I get what he's trying to achieve. I just don't think he achieved it in any way, shape, or form.
It was edited it's very poor the way they edited it together. And I don't mean like technically. I mean, the film looks good. Yeah. But
and that's what's so frustrating is that like I can't sit here and say that this is a poorly made film.
Right.
Like from a technical standpoint, it's a very well made movie. It's just from a storytelling standpoint, I really think it just collapses under its own weight.
Yeah. I mean, because the acting is good for the acting that you see. I mean, as far as them being scared, running
even
away.
Harry Styles was good.
I don't even know who that, like, so he I was going to ask if you know who that is.
I did not. Yeah, I didn't know who he was
I
either.
I thought Harry Styles was the guy who was accusing him of being German.
Okay, so he's,
I thought, I'm not 100%
so
on that.
So he's not one of the main characters, but one of the guys they get stuck in the boat with.
Let me look.
Because that's the funny thing is everyone was talking about, oh, Harry Styles in this movie, and I know he was in a band, but like I don't know what he looks like. And so I expected to see this movie and somehow to know that was, oh, that's Harry Styles. I'm like, but they all looked the same to me. All three of I guess, if you're saying it's that guy, they all looked the same.
Isn't that the guy?
Yeah, I still don't really know which one. To me, it's just all three of those characters, honestly.
I would definitely not know.
That's the guy that accused him of being a German, right?
Yeah, I think, because that picture, it's our...
Yeah, the other ones, I'm like...
Say.
Yeah, they all had dark, short hair. Yeah. They were all white, and they all had life vests on.
All the boy band singers look alike.
Yeah.
So, I agree with exactly what you're saying. It just didn't work. And so, you know, I thought that the action scenes were really good if they were intermixed with an interesting story with, you know, good writing.
It's funny. We talk about this all the time of like, you know, you want to care in order to be invested in the action.
Exactly.
You don't just want a delivery system for action.
So,
you know?
Think about it this way. I was just thinking, if you were to watch each of these clips individually without a story, so if you were to watch the beginning where he's trying to take a dump, but then there's gunfire and it's intense, your heart's pounding, that's a good scene.
Yeah.
If you were wanting to see some of the other the scene
when they're racing to get onto the boat with the stretcher, I thought that was great.
Like, as far as like
the
little
scene
clips
where
like
he's
that,
drowning in the plane, I thought was really well done.
Oh, yeah. I thought my favorite scene was when they're all, I guess, with
the
Harry
boat
Styles.
Scene where,
it's
exciting. It's intense, right? But it's funny that when you put all those together and string them together without a story and characters and dialogue, it doesn't have the impact.
The whole is less than the sum of its parts.
Yeah.
Yes.
Absolutely. And so, I just got bored with the main story, which was these kids running around trying to avoid bombs and gunfire, which I know is obviously a huge part of it. But again, it's like after a while, it's like, I get it. It's a dire situation. They're getting shot at. They're getting bombed. Without caring about the characters, it got redundant. And then we went back to the boat scene, and a third of the movie is just civilians on a boat sailing to Dunkirk. And I know there's a little more to it, because the main thing is they pick up Cillian Murphy, who's crashed on a plane. And so they pick him up, and he has like PTSD. He's in shock because his plane was shot down and crashed, which very understandable.
We even mentioned that he accidentally kills a guy.
Yeah. And so that's the main thing, is like this kid is the son of the captain of this boat. His friend decides to come along because he's never done anything important and he wants to impress his dad and be a hero. So he decides to come along, and Cillian Murphy ends up freaking out because they're sailing right into the war where he just crashed from, and he wants to go home. And so he starts freaking out, and he's like, I'm not going to let you go back to Dunkirk. And he's trying to grab the wheel. Is that a pirate? Is it not a pirate ship? On a ship, is it the wheel, or what do you?
Yeah, the wheel.
The wheel, right?
I don't grab
the wheel.
I wasn't rescuing anyone at Dunkirk.
But I mean, that's what I'm not a nautical guy, obviously. But so he grabs the wheel and starts struggling with the captain, the dad, and he ends up like kicking or hitting
the young
kid that came along for the ride down the stairs, and he ends up hitting his head. And the friend goes down there, and he eventually says that the kid that was hit can't see; he's blind. Yeah. And so, and Cillian Murphy is all freaked out, and he keeps asking, is he going to be okay? And, the friend, the son of the captain's getting all ticked off at him, and eventually the kid dies.
Yeah.
So is that kid who falls and hits his head, is that the captain's son?
No.
That's just another kid.
That's the friend, I guess.
He was pretty not flummoxed by all that. He's just kind of like, well, I mean, I know the British keep a stiff upper lip, but Jesus Christ, you got a dead 16-year-old laying in your boat.
Yeah, it was kind of a weird situation.
He's kind of like, well, save people.
But I guess if you're at war, I mean, with all that crazy,
but it's a civilian kid. Yeah. Like, I mean, I I would think.
Oh, which one? Who wasn't flummoxed?
The captain of the ship.
Yeah. I mean, he was dealing with... Absolutely.
Like, I get, like, I mean, I would have appreciated a line of dialogue of like, well, I got to focus on this right now. But then for that to happen, there would have needed to be dialogue,
right?
Yeah.
But so, yeah, so there's that part. But other than that conflict, I mean, really, it's like five scenes they flash back to Cillian Murphy being like, I don't want to go to Dunkirk. And then another five scenes of them going like, we're going to Dunkirk. And then he hits the kid and he dies. And it's like, that's the most... I mean, there's just not much to that. And I know they want you to care and they're trying to pull on your heartstrings because this kid's like, all I want to do is get in the paper and have, you know, my dad proud of me that I did something and whatever. And that comes back around at the end that, you know,
The friend
ends up
in the newspaper
giving his info to the paper.
Even though he didn't do anything.
Right. But, you know, so that's I think that's kind of a, I guess I don't want to call it manipulative because, I mean, that's what film does. But, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, again, I didn't really care enough about the story to really feel it like they wanted you to.
Not at all.
So it was like, yeah, I see what you're doing there. And in a better story, it would be like, wow, that's really impactful.
Yeah.
You know, but I didn't get emotional over it or teary-eyed or, you know, I just was like, okay. Well.
Yeah, I was so disappointed with this movie.
Yeah. And then the most disappointment, which I would have thought that I would say out of the three stories that probably sailing a boat to Dunkirk for a week would be the most boring part.
Yeah.
Except for a little scuffle. The dogfight. I have seen more exciting dogfights in Snoopy comic strips, and I'm not kidding.
Nothing happens.
Like Snoopy and the Red Baron.
Yeah.
I mean, more action happens. I mean, I just kept thinking like, I mean, Tom Hardy, I know he's trying to hit this thing, but that thing is like a bomber, and he's this little plane that's supposed to be able to shoot him down. He gives a few shots off, then he just kind of flies around and gets him in his sights. And I'm not saying that it's an easy job. I'm not like I could get up there and shoot him down, but like you would think eventually he would shoot this bomber down or clip him. He clips him a couple times, but it was so boring. There was no action. It wasn't really a dogfight. It was like a game of tag.
Yeah.
Where one...
And I'm sure probably, especially, you know, you didn't have computer systems and stuff, so I'm sure it was very difficult to shoot a plane down. Like, I have no doubt. But, like, at the same time, I don't feel like the movie really conveyed the degree of difficulty. It just was like, we're going to try again. Nope. Yeah. Going to try again.
But that...
Like, it could have been interesting had it shown you like, no, look, this is what you really need to do to shoot a plane down.
But
you know?
That bomber was hardly evasive. Tom Hardy had the smaller plane and the other guy shot his friend down. And I mean, that's what they're there to do. And I just feel like that plane, just somehow the bomber, because that's what it was. It wasn't like a little machine gun plane. It was a bomber dropping the bombs on the ship.
On the, yeah.
It just would not have evaded him for that entire hour. And that's what it's supposed to take place, an hour, which felt like 10 hours.
Yeah.
Because nothing happened. But it was really just throughout Tom Hardy marking his gas, talking to the other guy in some mumble
And I
talk.
Can't find out if the guy back on land was Michael Caine.
Okay.
I can't find any reference to who that character is.
Surprised you recognized
it. It sure sounded like my... Well, I was so starved for the human word.
Every little thing he clung to.
Yeah, anytime there was speech, I was perked up.
So, and then, but eventually at the end of the movie, I guess, Tom Hardy, after the thing successfully bombs everyone, basically, takes the thing out. I mean, there was hardly any risk, I think, at that point. But, I mean, you know what I mean? Like, he basically bombs, like, tons of ships, tons of people.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And then at the end, because you see at the end, I guess the mole is just covered in dead bodies. Like, they had killed so many soldiers at that point and bombed it and everything. So he takes
it
out.
Are you sure that they were dead, or did they maybe fall asleep from boredom?
Oh, it's one of those things. It's kind of like Pain and Gain, where I really don't want to make fun of it. Like, it feels a little weird.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, with Pain and Gain, I'm like, that would be such a great fictional work, because but it's real. And,
yeah,
you know.
I get that.
But really,
I'm dead on the inside.
That's true.
So I can get away with it.
So, yeah, I mean, and at the end, he does eventually take out that bomber, and everyone's cheering at him because there was just that one plane threat, I guess, for the entire battle.
Germans just had the one. They weren't staffed up yet.
Yeah, I guess not. And so he takes it out, and they're all cheering, but at this point, his propeller, I guess he ran out of fuel, propeller stopped moving, so he's, like, gliding as long as he can, and eventually lands on the beach, and that's when we see his face, like, fully for the first time. A lot of people said, was that Tom Hardy? Like, you know, and I knew he was going to be in it, and I could tell from the eyes, but it was funny that people actually went, Tom Hardy was in this movie?
And he told us.
And then he's captured by German soldiers eventually.
It was probably the easiest role he ever had to film for.
Oh, I'm sure.
Yeah, just in an airplane. And
but I mean, the acting with the eyes and everything, like...
I mean, I couldn't
not
do
to,
that, yeah.
Yeah, not to call Tom Hardy a bad actor, but again, as far as dialogue and things to do. I mean, it is just one location. So, but yeah, again, this should have been exciting. I mean, you think about war movies and dogfights, and you know, you think you're going to be in for at least some excitement. Mm-hmm. But
yeah, there. I mean, yeah, I was very, very mystified.
Yeah. So, I mean, at the end of the day, does the French kid die? One of them dies, right?
I don't know.
I can't.
It really is unfortunate.
Like further it got in the movie, like their hair got wet, they got dirtier.
And I'm telling you, they looked very similar.
And so, like, they already looked similar.
Yeah.
And then
they have oil on their face.
Yeah. Their hair gets wet and their faces get covered in oil when they go into the water when the boat capsizes. So, like, it got even harder to tell them apart. So, one of them died. I don't know.
Which one? Was it Harry Styles that dies? Who's reaching for the ladder? So the one intense scene that Devin was talking about, again, as a clip, as a scene, it was a good, well-made scene.
Right.
But they find a boat that's washed up during high tide, and now the water's back down. So they have 8 or so soldiers. They all get in the boat, and they're waiting for the water to come back. Well, it gets shot, and they eventually find out that it's target practice because they see a group of 3 bullets. So they're like, they're not trying to kill us. They're just... Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
messing around.
So now and this was cool because they couldn't shoot back because they're not attacking them. It's target practice. So if they shoot back, they'll give away that they're in there.
And they can't get out of it because
some guy tries to like look through one of the holes and get shot in the eye in the face.
It was intense.
Cover his mouth.
Yeah, and I like it because it also built the tension because now that it's shot and the water starts coming back up, the boat is still operational, but now that it has water in it, that takes up the weight a person would take. So more water comes in, more people have to leave to offset it. You can still sail it, but you know, it's heavier and it would sink with all the water.
The fact that the boat sank kind of like threw away the twist too. Like the big deal was the twist that he was French. And,
right.
Yeah. And that's like, oh, well now they're all dead.
Cause this is the scene where you find out he's French. We should write that.
Yeah.
Because they, the Harry Styles character is like
he's a German spy.
They're trying to figure out who to throw off the boat, and then he's like, that guy's a German spy because he hasn't talked, and he won't talk because he either doesn't know English, or if he does, he has an accent.
Which, it has to be another misdirection that part one was called The Mole, because you're supposed to think, I am not a what would you call an architectural nautical expert. I mean, I didn't know a mole until I looked it up was a seawall barrier type deal. And so it goes one, the mole, and then it shows either this guy or the other one, whichever one.
But,
so you're thinking, oh, there's a mole, a spy. That's, you know, so I think that was also part of the trick.
Oh, I agree wholeheartedly.
Most people wouldn't know.
I don't think that was an accident.
Yeah, exactly.
Because honestly, in the grand scheme of things, mole didn't play the mole itself, the seawall.
They were at it for...
They didn't play that large of a...
No.
Except for the fact that that's why they set up camp there, is because they ended up using the mole as a dock because the docks had been destroyed. So one of the generals had an idea of like, well, let's use the mole as a dock and bring in smaller boats because the bigger boats couldn't get close enough. And apparently, like, when the soldiers were waiting to get picked up, they would wade out into the water, into shoulder high water, and they had to stand there all day waiting for the boat. And so it's like, what an interesting story. You should tell it.
Yeah. I think there's probably a lot of interesting stories that you could tell with dialogue and characters that you know their names.
We added sound to movies for a reason.
Yeah. Kenneth Branagh was in this.
Yeah.
He's a good actor. He
Absolutely.
Had probably the most dialogue of anyone. He plays a high up a general or a high ranking official admiral in the Navy.
He's kind of like the guy that was running the show.
Yeah. And he's good. He's a great actor and director.
He's the only one that gives information about what's going on.
Yeah.
Pretty much. Yeah.
And so, I mean, he was good, but it just wasn't enough to really. And again, you don't really care enough about anyone that you're, you can't save
and
it.
Then I guess when you get to the end and they finally get everybody off the island, and then Kenneth Branagh's character decides he's going to stay there and help the French get all, you know, he's going to say, well, now let's get the French off this island, which it was Winston Churchill who decided that, not this guy, which seemed odd. Like, I get that they want to convey that the British stayed there, but he wasn't like, I will do this. It was like Churchill was like, now save the French.
Yeah.
Like we saved our people. Now save as many of them as you can. And I think they saved like another 30,000 or 40,000 French.
Yeah.
They still had to evacuate and have a lot die.
Because the Germans eventually did take over. So they could only, I guess this is what lost the war for Germany, was that Hitler wanted to attack Dunkirk. So Hitler wanted to, and it wasn't his decision not to. It was someone else who told him, advised him, one of his guys advised him not to attack Dunkirk, that they should build up their forces and do whatever for the upcoming assault. So as far as I understand it, this was the one key point.
Like a key blunder, even though it comes very early in the war, yeah. It ends up being a crucial blunder.
Yeah. Because there's 300,000 British soldiers that could then fight another day that they would have taken out,
right.
and taken everything from them. And mm-hmm. I just think it was a very pivotal point. And of course, like you said, there's a lot of different things that
and
add
we
up.
We know this, that because we read about it afterwards.
Exactly. Yeah. And yeah, all this is based on research after the movie, because I really wanted to find out the story. I told myself there's no way they're making a movie about an event that wasn't significant, right? Like,
right.
There's a reason they're making this movie. It's not just something that happened. And
I think part of the reason, like, this is a huge event in Britain. Like, this is a cultural touchstone for them, or a historical touchstone for them. It looms large over their history, and it's kind of that mentality of the British they'll button up and they'll do what needs to be done, and they're not going to bitch about it, and they will go in and do what they need to, and they will get out, and then they will go on with their day. Like they even talk about it. It's still a saying, I guess, in England, the Dunkirk
way,
the Dunkirk Constitution, or the Dunkirk mentality, or something like that.
Never been out of North America,
but it doesn't loom that large over here,
right?
And
we're not familiar.
And I think the reason for that is the Churchill. So this is the incident where Churchill gives his famous speech about we will fight on the beaches and we will fight on this. Like this, it's a very famous speech,
and he gives it at the end of the movie, right?
He doesn't.
I thought they do have a radio.
They have a guy reading it from the newspaper.
Yeah, I was going to say that.
So
you don't actually get to hear Churchill, because when you hear Churchill give it, it's a very famous speech that you've heard.
Who played Churchill? Was it Hopkins? Or who?
Did we ever see Churchill?
In another movie. Who plays Churchill in...
Is it like... Is it Bryan Cranston, maybe? Like, there's...
Oh, maybe.
There's a Churchill movie
getting
ready to come
out. I know there's a big name that plays Churchill.
But so you don't get to actually hear Churchill saying it. And I'm even okay with that, because that's... Most people wouldn't have. They would have read it in the paper. So I'm okay with that. But I think the reason it doesn't loom large over here is because in the speech that's even famous, Churchill says, like, look, let's not consider this a victory. He's like, you don't win wars by evacuating, and like mm-hmm. there's even a character that
Brian
says
Cox.
That, Brian Cox. Okay, oh. I had the Brian part right. but honestly, I thought there was one with a bigger actor playing Churchill. But
this one just came out last month, I think, is why it was kind of top of mind. Oh yeah, there's other ones certainly,
but a new one. I mean, obviously, actors have played him
over time.
But
Gary Oldman.
I think that's what I'm thinking.
Wow.
Yeah.
Just real quick. This was updated July 13th, so I guess it is newer. Gary Oldman is unrecognizable as Winston Churchill in the new World War II movie trailer, Darkest Hour.
That's what I was thinking.
Okay.
So, but, you know, he says in his speech, and they lift the line and put it in the movie about you don't win a war by evacuating. So while this was a huge achievement and we're really glad it happened, let's not pat ourselves on the back mm-hmm. too much, because we still had to run away. So let's regroup and get back to fighting. And I think that's part of why it's kind of really famous in England, but maybe not so much over here. It's certainly known. I don't want to act like this is some secret, forgotten piece of history.
Yeah.
If you're a World War II buff, you absolutely know about this.
Yeah.
But if you're not a World War II buff, there's a good chance you don't.
Right. That's the problem, is that this is a big summer blockbuster type of film. You know, this is Christopher Nolan directing a World War II movie. That's like saying Steven Spielberg directing a World War II movie.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, in this day and age, that holds the same amount based on his filmmaking history. I mean, that has the same impact. So when you say Steven Spielberg's making Saving Private Ryan and Christopher Nolan's making Dunkirk, like, you're expecting those two things are going to be on the same level.
Right.
And people are, I predict it now, people are going to go to this movie because it has a 98% on Rotten Tomatoes. Christopher Nolan, all the actors that are in it, they're going to see it the first weekend. And 90%, I mean, I'm just making that up, but I think 90% are going to leave going, ugh. Like,
this is not what I thought it was.
The audience is not going to go for this because, yes, is it a technical achievement in filmmaking? Not storytelling, but filmmaking? Yes, technically, it's a great movie, but summer audiences are not wanting to go to the theater for this.
Well, I know it's like we said, it only has one bad review, and the guy I love that review. He talks about how it's the editing is just so choppy though, but
yeah.
I wonder, I didn't check all the outlets, but you know how outlets, you know,
they're not all in.
Yeah,
yet.
They're all
absolutely.
They all have different ones in Europe and whatnot. Yeah. I wonder if the embargo was released in the UK first.
Yeah. Well, yeah, I agree.
Yeah, I didn't.
These are the thing is, it comes out this Friday or Thursday night.
Yeah.
And all these reviews were at 98% as of last weekend.
But there were like 48 or 50 reviews.
Like, oh, yeah.
It wasn't like there 10, were three.
But this should be like a, I feel like a 200 review movie.
Sure.
You know, this
yeah.
is
oh, yeah, yeah.
Nolan's summer. So it will be interesting to see if it levels out. I think you're onto something there, Devin. But I really feel like week one, it's going to do well. They're going to make some money on this sucker. And I'm telling you, week two coming out against Atomic Blonde, not just because of the competition, but I mean, with that coming out and the word of mouth, which I don't think will be great, I really think the second week's going to take a huge drop. I bet it's 60, 70%.
I can't imagine anyone wants to see this movie more than once.
And that's the other
thing.
Could you ever imagine watching this again?
And you know, when you compare it to Spielberg, and obviously the obvious comparison is Saving Private Ryan, but with another Spielberg World War II movie, Schindler's List. Like,
sure.
There's a movie that you walk out of thinking, who's going to go see this again? But it was so good.
Mm-hmm.
People did, even though it's one of the more difficult, especially
yes.
mainstream movies to watch in terms of the content. Like,
mm-hmm.
it's a great film,
yeah.
but it's very difficult to sit
Do you own that movie?
I do.
I do, too. Have you ever watched yours?
No, I have not.
Absolutely not.
Yeah.
I bought it when I
intend to, but
yes.
it's hard to sit down and just be like, let's watch Schindler's List.
I've seen it once, and I bought it.
I saw it twice in the theater, and it's funny, because when I went to see it the second time, I even said, I'm going to go see this in the theater a second time, because I know how unlikely I am to ever sit down and watch this film beginning to end on my own.
Without having mm-hmm. to, because you bought a ticket and you're sitting there.
Right, yeah. And once you buy a ticket, you know, you, yeah. you're strapped in. And
you're not going to let that $4.50 go to waste.
Right, yeah. I mean, it was 1994 or whatever.
I mean, that was nighttime fees. I'm not talking about the matinee.
Yeah,
you were there at $4.50 for the nighttime show.
I was baller, man.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, it's, so same thing. Like, I was like, I need to see this movie one more time in the theater, because I don't know that I'll ever yeah. have the constitution yeah. to sit through twice.
I bought it. I was 16 or 17 working at Circuit City, and I, you know, release day Tuesday, they came out with the whatever at the time, 20th anniversary edition, what special DVD, 2-disc collector edition.
Right.
And I'm like, this is an important movie. It's on sale. Always the first week they come out, it's on sale. And I'm like, well, I better pick up this special edition. I've never watched it to this day. We're talking about 14, 15 years later. I just...
Yeah, know. I have it on Blu-ray. Yeah.
But not because it's anything like this movie, but you know what I mean? That's
right.
A movie where it's tough to make yourself watch again. So this
one of those movies, there's those movies that are like the best movie you'll never watch again.
Absolutely.
So like Schindler's List mm-hmm. is like that. Requiem for a Dream.
That one I do go back and watch every couple of years, because, and it is a tough watch. It's just so damn good. And there's something about it, I think, from an artistic, like the art style. I mean, Schindler's List is a great movie, but it's a really well-made Steven Spielberg movie, right?
Yeah. Requiem for a Dream is a lot more stylized.
Yeah, and so I love watching all those shots, you know, where they do kind of like what Sam Raimi does when they're getting the drugs together. It's the quick close-up zoom shots in the beginning and popping the drugs and, it looks neat, right? And there's so much art to it where I want to go back and watch it just to see that art. And not so much the subject matter, which is very hard to watch. But yeah, anyway, so this movie, I don't think anyone that we talked to last night, talked to a few different critics and people that were there, I'm like, could you ever imagine watching this again? And I think the consensus is no, unless you're going to watch a clip like The Phantom Menace. So The Phantom Menace, I put back in to watch that lightsaber scene with Darth Maul.
Right.
Oh,
that's
so
an
good.
Amazing scene.
So good.
When I used to test home stereo systems or want to show off my home theater or whatever, it was the pod racing scene with all the bass and everything.
Yeah.
And then that lightsaber scene is still an amazing fight choreography.
Sure.
Great sequence, right? So if I wanted to be like,
no Princess Bride.
Well, you know. So it's like, maybe if someone just wanted from a technical standpoint, like, oh, look at this clever editing or sound. Okay.
From a technical guy, this is a gorgeous movie. And
yeah.
And it's hard to tell, like, the whole, like, at the end, we're talking about Tom Hardy's, he runs out of gas.
Yeah.
And then gliding. I kept on going back and forth whether I think that's CGI or not. It's like, would they actually have someone stop an airplane? I was like,
Christopher Nolan is a practical effects guy. So to film The Dark Knight, The Dark Knight Rises. They lifted a plane into the air and filmed in air.
He loves his practical effects.
So I bet you more of this is practical than you'd think, but more of it's CG than you'd also think, because you just can't have that many ships of that time period. And
it might be practical with a CGI assist. Sure. There might be a lot of that
definitely,
going on. Ultimately, it's a shame. I think this is probably the first Christopher Nolan film that I've just flat out been like, not interested.
No. I mean, I'm telling you right now, I think I really not just like, but I pretty much love everything he's done. I thought Memento was my first introduction to him. I guess maybe there was like a...
I think there's a small art house film before that, but Memento is most people's first.
I mean,
first.
And that was his first big film.
That's my favorite
And it's incredible. I can't tell you how many times I've gone back and watched that, because it's a lot. I mean, that I will go back and watch, and I've showed people that have never seen it, and they go and show... You know, it's like one of those movies that you just blows your mind when you watch it. But I liked Insomnia. I really liked Insomnia. Al Pacino, Robin Williams, The Prestige. I love. I think that's genius. I think the misdirections and the twist in that, I think, is genius. Like, that is tricky, not tricky, but you know, that is Sixth Sense type stuff going on. Like, done really well.
I had some problems with The Prestige when it came out initially. I like it now,
because
I accept it on its own terms. But I had read the book.
Oh, okay,
and was put off by the film, because I was like, but that's not what this is about. And so once I kind of got past that, though, like, I'm like, okay, it's in the same way that, like, I get why Stephen King doesn't like Stanley Kubrick's version of The Shining, because that's one of his best books, and Stanley Kubrick, if you went there to see the book, you're not going to be happy.
And that's such a good movie from someone who didn't grow up. Like, you know, I was obviously younger, so I saw the movie. I hadn't read the book yet when
and honestly, it might be my favorite. I'm not a big Kubrick fan, so that might be my favorite Kubrick movie. It's probably that or Full Metal Jacket.
Yeah.
But I think that's a great movie.
Yeah.
But it's also, I would love to see someone make The Shining right.
So, like, it is supposed to be a faithful adaptation.
I believe so. Yeah. I still don't know how you can do that last scene.
Say that end, towards the end.
There you go. You got two big problems.
Yeah.
You got a mystical turtle, and you got a gangbang on a 12-year-old girl.
Oh.
And it's supposed to be like sentimental and closure for these characters. Oh. So it's like, I mean, I remember reading the book when it came out like 30 years ago, and even then I was like, what are we doing? Are we really going to... Like, and the book is so, so good up until that last 20 pages that I think a lot of people just chose to turn a blind eye because they liked some. But, I mean, I got to the end and I was just like, I mean, it was good, but, like, what is that? How are we supposed to pretend like that was a good moment?
Yeah.
Like, it was really weird.
But, so I agree. I mean, going back to Nolan, I mean, I liked all the Batman movies, even The Dark Knight Rises. I know The Dark Knight is one of the best, but I still really enjoyed Dark Knight Rises. I enjoyed Inception. And then Interstellar, I think that's one where I enjoyed it, but it wasn't my favorite, but still.
My problem is that it always, like, broke its own rules, but I mean...
There was a lot of stuff, and especially when you do the math, and I'm no scientist, but, you know, I was curious how accurate the time frame was and everything, and it's...
I think it was Passengers. I hated that movie, but...
That's an awful movie.
I was listening to the podcast driving, and I think it was you, there was like, you would fly off into space because the ship is driving, and I'm like, no, you wouldn't. Like, we're going through space right now on this planet, like, going like super fast, like driving me.
I'm no scientist. I don't, you know.
I was a mass communications major, so like I'll tell you, like, I don't know.
Yeah,
so, I didn't graduate from college till I was 45 because I had to take a math class to do it.
Yeah, so suck it.
Yeah.
So. Yeah. But yeah, I mean, this is really the first misstep, and I think also it's very sad because, and Tom, you hit on it earlier, because it's so technically good that if this stuff wasn't a better story, This could be a great movie.
Absolutely.
Because of the skills of Nolan and everyone that was involved with it. It's a beautiful film. The sound of bullets and bombs, you know, things whizzing past your ears. It's like, it was
amazing.
I love
that. And that's one of my big complaints. I think a lot of filmmakers don't take sound as seriously as they should. Like, there are so many cool things that they could do with sound to mess with your head and get you disoriented, especially in an action movie or a horror movie that just gets left on the table.
It's overlooked.
That I'm just like, stop doing jump scares. It's like you can, there are other things you can do to freak people out, and they just leave so much on the table. But and he's a director who gets that, and so like, again, there's so many technical things to like about the film.
It's weird that we end up where we are, because like, to me, like, there were points in this movie where my heart was racing and it was intense, and I was, you know, like, so it accomplished those things, but as a whole, I didn't like it at all. So it's just weird to have it be look and sound so good and still pull on some of those emotions.
It's funny the way film works like that. Like, someone can make can have a well-made movie that doesn't entertain you, and then you can have a movie that's not well-made that entertains the living crap out of you. I mean, how many movies do we like that we know they're not good movies? I mean, even like a movie that everyone loves, Caddyshack.
Yeah.
It's not a good movie. Like, that's like, on paper, that's not a good movie. It's not all that well shot. It's not all that well lit. There's no cohesive story. There's no character arcs. There's no through lines. But we love it.
But it's
really funny. And for some reason, we enjoy spending time with those characters. And so we watch that movie over and over again, even though from a technical standpoint, it's not a very good movie.
Yeah.
And this is like the opposite of Caddyshack.
Because at the end of the day, if you're not a history buff or a World War II buff and you didn't know the story going in, you leave with nothing more than what you came in with.
I mean,
hardly anything more. Mm-hmm. And so you have to go look it up. And then when you look it up and you go, this was amazing that this happened and they were able to get out. Like, it's an amazing story and you just wish you would have seen it.
Yeah. I mean, I was getting ready to leave for work when I was trying to read the Wikipedia article, and I was like, oh, damn it, this is fascinating. Like, I want to keep reading this. And it's like, it's a shame when the Wikipedia article is more interesting than your film.
I bet there's a great History Channel documentary on this.
There was a movie in 1957 called Dunkirk that starred Richard Attenborough. I've never seen it. I don't know how it holds up, but they have done this story before.
The research I did brought that up, though. But yeah, this movie's in a tough place, because if you're a history buff, you'd rather watch a documentary or, read something. If you're not, well, this movie,
it's not going to connect with audiences. This is one where, sometimes, let's say, call it a Fast and Furious movie, or, just one of those action movies that people love and makes $1 billion, but the critics hate it. Yeah. This is going to be the opposite. This is going to be, 98% Rotten Tomatoes, but I'm guessing the audience is going to be like 60% liked it or something. It's going to be like that.
Yeah, I think it's... With CinemaScore, it's pretty hard to get a bad score on CinemaScore, but like, I think a B is considered bad. Yeah.
Well,
yeah.
Nolan has his like freaky followers that will watch anything.
Well, and that's the problem.
They will tear us to shreds when we post.
And this is the problem. This is just like saying you don't like a Tarantino movie.
Yeah,
Nolan, and because I guess I wouldn't consider myself one of those, because I came out and said I didn't like this movie, but like, I can see why people are like that, because he's been so good his whole history. So that's why you build a following. Tarantino doesn't have many misses. Nolan doesn't.
I don't know that he's ever made a movie that I didn't like.
Yeah, I mean, I didn't like Death Proof, but that's the only one that I just...
I get that. It's pretty slow going at the beginning.
Yeah.
But I did enjoy... But I enjoyed it. Yeah. That being said, I've never revisited it.
Yeah.
So, but I enjoyed it while I was watching.
He has that kind of a following.
Yeah,
it is going to be one where people are going to defend it tooth and nail. But I think it's unfortunate.
I thought Hateful Eight was too long, though. But
I liked that movie.
But this movie felt way longer than Hateful Eight.
Which it did.
Oh my gosh! Yeah,
yeah. At least Hateful Eight gave you a pee break.
I liked Hateful Eight. It's just
What was it like?
2 and 40 minutes,
something.
2 hours and 40
minutes. Yeah, it was. If you watch the whole director's cut, 70mm, blah blah blah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think it was close to 3 hours. But I mean, I will say, the older he gets, the more self indulgent his films become. But he's also earned the right.
Yeah.
So is Nolan. I just think that this is a misfire.
It's a miss. Yeah. What this did get me excited for is Murder on the Orient Express. I mean, just seeing Kenneth Branagh on it, I'm like, I can't wait till that movie comes out.
Yeah, I'm interested to see how that plays out, especially because, like, I've read the book, so, like...
I mean, it's a famous...
I know how the mystery ends.
Oh, yeah. But it's Agatha Christie. It's Hercule Poirot. Like, I'm curious to see that in a big movie. Not that they've never made a Hercule Poirot movie, but, like, this is a...
They did a pretty well-received version of this film in the 70s.
But this is a big current blockbuster type movie in November, Thanksgiving time, with a huge cast. Daisy Ridley, Josh Gad, there's tons of people.
I picture a 1970s posters with all the squares along the bottom with the famous people, like they did for Airport or Tower and Inferno.
Yeah.
Like, it seems like that kind of movie.
Absolutely.
And I mean that in a good way. So
Clue.
Yeah.
Well, like Clue, come on.
Yeah.
I love that movie. I only mentioned it because it, like, it's kind of similar with the mystery.
And it's got, I think it even had a similar poster. Those,
all the characters are like, you know, what, whoever, Colonel Mustard.
Yeah.
But, yeah.
So, well, I guess that's it for this episode. I guess
this is the last time we ever have to talk or think about this movie, I guess, right?
Hopefully. Yeah, fingers crossed.
Who's editing?
It'll be in the box office report for a while, probably.
Is Chris still going to edit this one? Or do I have to?
No, you have to sit through it twice. So Devin, where can people find you on the internet?
Find me on Twitter, not on Facebook, but at All Dogs Go to Devin, D-E-V-I-N, and
that's
the number 2.
That's a great name.
And also, you can look at my website, devinjking.com. You can see I have an animation reel that'll go up by the time this is up. And,
oh, cool.
Yeah, if you want to look at some CGI artwork.
Nice.
Sweet.
It's good stuff. I saw he has this towel hanging on a wall that I thought was a photo of, like, I was, because he was going through his phone showing me his work.
Right.
And I thought that it was just a random shot of a towel in his bathroom. It's a CGI towel on a wall that looks so real.
Oh, wow.
And I was like, did you mean to, like, is that just, you know what I mean? Like, oops, did you mean to show me that picture?
There are more embarrassing things you can find swiping through someone's phone.
Yeah, absolutely. this is Kevin. Follow me on Twitter at Kevin R. Brackett or on ReviewSTL.com.
And this is Tom. You can follow me on Twitter at Roger Kubert or on Facebook. At facebook.com/Tom O'Keefe. Don't forget, if you want a continued conversation online, you can find us at facebook.com/Real Spoilers or on Twitter at Real Spoilers or on our website, realspoilers.com or dirtypiratehookers.com. So thanks for tuning in, and until next time, Burkhead's plane lands in the La Brea tar pits.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.